I'm delighted to announce that the National Association for Primary Education has exclusively released a video from its Primary Education Summit, Visions for the Future. This video, recorded by me, Mark Taylor, and Elle Kingsley, talks about creating digital strategies for schools. This video is available for you to watch now at educationonfire.com/blog, which I really hope gives you a taster of some of the amazing content that was available as part of that Primary Education Summit. That's educationonfire.com/blog.
Hello, my name is Mark Taylor, and welcome to the Education on Fire podcast. The place for creative and inspiring learning from around the world. Listen to teachers, parents, and mentors share how they are supporting children to live their best, authentic life and are proving to be a guiding light to us all.
Hello, welcome back to the Education on Fire podcast. Great to be back with you as always. Now, I have a question for you. Is there a live event you would like me to visit and do some interviews and some recording from? I've been to the Bet Show. I've been to a few other things where I've done sort of remote recording, and it's a great thing to do. And I haven't done it for a year or so. So I'd like to get out and about and do some more. So if there's an event that you love, an event that you've been to that you'd like me to go and visit and do a remote interview from, or a little bit of kind of remote recording, let me know. Just send me an email, mark@educationonfire.com, and I'll see if I can find out more information and see where that leads us. Now, today I'm delighted to be chatting to Michael Hemphill. Now, Dr. Hemphill's research focuses on teaching personal and social responsibility through sport, physical activity, and physical education, with specific applications to urban communities and professional development programs for physical activity providers. His research is grounded in community engagement scholarship, which features reciprocal community partners and interdisciplinary collaborations to address community-identified needs. This research has been situated in local contexts in Charleston, South Carolina, and Greensboro, North Carolina, as well as international applications in New Zealand and Sri Lanka. Now, this is a fascinating conversation, and you know here on the podcast, we like it when people have a 360 view of maybe how we can improve things, how we can really help and support people, and certainly with community at the heart of what we can do to improve everyone's welfare and life. So I really hope you enjoy this conversation with Dr. Hemphill. Hi, Michael. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Education on Fire podcast. I know certainly sports, PE, that kind of idea of physical activity is incredibly important for people generally. But I think understanding how that can fit into the broader area of people's lives and certainly within learning generally is a fascinating idea and something I know obviously is at the heart and soul of what you're doing. So thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. I was excited to find this podcast for my own listening pleasure, and just really thrilled that I'd have a chance to participate on the series.
Fantastic. So take us into your sort of day-to-day life, as it were, in terms of, you know, the university, the structure, the kind of things that you're able to support people with.
Yeah, I work at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro. That's in the United States, East Coast United States. I'm an associate professor of kinesiology. Kinesiology is just simply a term that means the study of human movement. So it encompasses a variety of exciting things. I fit into it because I'm trained as a physical educator, and I've worked in physical education and youth sports settings throughout my career. And so obviously that's deeply connected to the study of movement. In my university position, I have several responsibilities. They can be categorized as teaching, research, and service. And so a lot of my research and service portfolio involves engaging with the community, be that the local community here in Greensboro, North Carolina, or external communities. I've worked as far away as in New Zealand in my research programs. That research and service is typically around connecting with youth sports programs in an effort to promote the development of life skills through sports. And I'll talk about in the conversation a particular framework that interests me around restorative justice. And so what I've done is tried to take the ideas from restorative justice and figure out how they fit into a youth sport context.
Yeah, I love that. And I think one of the things that comes up so much on the show is that sense of everything is connected, isn't it? It's that kind of, we want to open up the conversations, we want to understand how every part of our life we can utilize it in a way that's going to be beneficial for us individually, but then, like say, the community immediately, and then also the community at large.
That's right. That's very well said. And, you know, one thing I always remind myself and young people about in sports is if we don't think about it broader than just the competition, then ultimately everybody loses out. Because if you're doing, you know, competition, ultimately you rule out the losers and, you know, only the champions advance. And so obviously sports and youth sports should have a much broader purpose in society where everyone can benefit greatly from it through their physical development, their social emotional development, development of cognitive skills. And I really think there's immense potential for sport to build so-called build character, let's say. And I use that term because it's kind of a moniker that we use. You'll hear it if you watch professional sports on TV. You know, they'll say sport builds great character. They're learning these leadership skills. It is serving this great purpose. And although that can be true, it's not always held accountable for that. And that can be a really taken for granted assumption. And so in my thinking, I try to remind myself that if sport can build good leadership skills and build good character, it can also build bad character and bad leadership skills. And so you have to be very intentional about integrating these aspects into the experiences that young people are getting.
And it seems to me often that I guess the education starts, like you say, almost before you've done anything, because you're sort of setting that environment and setting that scene in order to do that. And I think they're also often sort of two sides to that coin, which are, I don't know, they're kind of very yin and yang. It's that kind of what you were talking about there in terms of setting the character, what you're trying to do, the way you want to be in order to go about doing what you're doing can be very inviting. It can be wholly encompassing. It can be wholesome for that matter. And yes, we might want to win. We want to give 100%. We're going to put ourselves in the best possible chance to do that. The results come from who we are and how we're going about what we're doing. And it's easily to go that other side, which is kind of, you know, I'm just going to do everything I can at a million miles an hour at 100%, no matter who it is. I'm just going to sort of bang the nail as hard as I can. And I think sometimes the problem is they do get results to some extent, but the detriment of that can be really serious, as we sort of see sort of publicly from sort of professional sports and that kind of thing. But it's like, say, starting with the right understanding of where both of those two sort of sides of the coin can take you, I guess, is probably a really important factor.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, there's a big part of sport experiences, I think, is self-exploration and understanding what is my potential to contribute in this space. And I think that can relate to goal setting. So, for example, in a sport competition, you're going to aim to, you want to win the game. You want to win the championship. You want to do all those things. But you have an opportunity to learn that there are going to be some competitions which you simply don't possess the skills necessary to succeed on the scoreboard. You're not athletic enough. You're not big enough. You're not a good enough shooter, whatever the case might be. But what you can do is examine yourself and your team and figure out, you know, what is my capacity to contribute in this environment? And is it possible for me to achieve that full potential? You know, can I challenge myself and find success in that? And that drawn upon, there's a famous American basketball coach from, I think it's 1970s, John Wooden. He won, I think, 10 championships in college basketball. And he says, he didn't like to talk about winning, but it was to maximize your potential. That was the secret to success. And so some of this thinking draws on that. And that's a powerful vision because it offers something for everyone. You know, everyone can develop and achieve their potential. And for some, that's going to materialize into some success on the scoreboard. And for others, it's not going to show up in that way. But if you know that person, you can see that success and celebrate that.
And they talk about the journey, and I guess that's an incredibly important part, isn't it? Because even if ultimately you think success is going to be on the scoreboard, it might be that success is going to be in 5 years or 10 years, because, like you say, you've got the physical development, the mental development, and also just maybe age, you know, in terms of getting where you want to go. So having that idea of where you want to go is really important. But that idea of, you know, it's only about the here and now, you know, what am I doing now to help me get towards those goals? But also embracing that the fact is, you know, it might just be the training session. It might be the conversations. It might be like, say, how you're building that community and how you're showing up every single day. And then you're winning every single day, despite, you know, like you say, how much silverware you might have at the end of your college course or your professional mm-hmm. career, or however that happens to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I'm glad you mentioned the long-term aspect. And I think this is where, I think we can do better in thinking about how we provide sport opportunities to young people, because those, what you just described, you could relate to a lot of life challenges. I suspect that, you know, parents might experience those types of long-term ups and downs. Certainly in my career, I've experienced that. I see that happening in other careers as well. And so the ability to think about long-term goal setting and developing a pathway to achieve, you know, what your goals are individually and as a team is something that is available in a sport context, but only available if we have a set of values in sports that is interested in the holistic development of young people. I think if we're only interested in, hey, this year the goal is to, you know, get the winning record and win the championship, then we focus in so much on the competitive aspects that we lose some of that. And I'll give you that there certainly is indirect life lessons learned even in the most competitive sporting environment. And so the work that we do tries to emphasize that we should be intentional about integrating life skill instruction, about helping kids develop relationships through a sport experience, about helping them resolve conflicts, which is very important to me, through relationships, so that those skills can also develop alongside the physical skills that they might be developing. And those are going to be applicable to their life down the line, no matter what they do. But if they do happen to be good at sports later on, they're going to be especially useful in that context as well.
And how does it work in terms of sort of, if we're sort of thinking about students going into the university, you know, is what you're doing sort of a part of what they're learning, or is it much more kind of integrated across sort of all the faculty and all the different sort of areas that they'll be working on?
So, yeah, excellent question. So we have students who might express an interest in this type of thing, and they would then have an opportunity to work with in one of my programs. I call them restorative youth sports, is kind of the branding that we use. So there'll be a small number of students who choose to do that, some at the undergraduate level, but more so at the graduate level. Some students are pursuing their doctoral degree, so they're getting an in-depth learning experience about this and writing about it and thinking about it quite a bit. But we do, I mentioned the community engagement aspect. We actually have parts of our research where we go out into communities and partner with schools or community organizations to develop sport opportunities that really emphasize the values that I'm speaking about, and then do some kind of assessment to see, you know, how is that working and what would be necessary to sustain these types of programs, and even engage the students, the young people, in conversations about what are you experiencing here, what are you learning, how could this be improved, and so on. And so through those efforts, we're trying to plant seeds for these ideas to spread, and in hopes that there might be some coaches out there that we work with that go on to integrate this into their own programs and that sort of thing. So it's very much a part of my agenda as a professor that I take out into the community. Other students at the university wouldn't necessarily experience that in the same way that I'm talking about it. We certainly have a variety of great programs, but they would be connecting to my particular iteration of it.
And how did this kind of manifest itself from your journey? Is it something you always kind of knew was important within your experience? Is it something you sort of came across and then sort of took you down that path? How did that work out for you?
Yeah, it is. So I have a colleague, she says, all research is me search. And so one of the cool things about research is you typically have some autonomy in what you choose to study. And for me, I definitely had an experience as a kid. I love basketball to this day. And I played basketball. I'm tall. And so if you saw me, you would expect that I played basketball because of my physical stature. And I wasn't very good at it. I was good enough, you know, to kind of be on the team and have a roster spot, but was never as good as maybe people thought I might be because I was the tallest person on the court. And I think I struggled with that a little bit mentally. And I also struggled with the fact that the expectation was there for me to be a good basketball player, but it wasn't connected and tied up with an expectation to do other things as well. So it didn't suggest to me that because you're a basketball player, you should also be really studying hard and really performing in the classroom, and you should be really an outstanding leader in the community. It just didn't connect up with those areas. And so I think with me being someone who was not a high achiever in the sport, I was looking for those other outlets where I could be a basketball player but also excel in these areas where that was not available to me in sports because I just didn't have the physical skills or whatever it might be. So, you know, in high school, you kind of go along, you don't know to ask questions or how to deal with those types of feelings. But when I got into college and read a little bit about different ways of approaching sports, I started to understand that sports could be really a powerful way to connect with young people who are having the sorts of feelings that I'm describing and really take advantage of that and help them explore their potential within the sport and outside of the sport. So when I got to college, I could kind of put names to it. You know, there were people who had written about it, people who had had some kind of programs and volunteer opportunities that I could connect to. And I ultimately had a specific professor named Dr. Dennis Johnson who had studied this in his doctoral program and really attached to his ideas and used that as a launching pad for me to get into this line of work.
I love that because I think what you articulated there so clearly is that sense of if you'd known in some way or another when you were younger, then it would have been easier or certainly just knowing that there's a conversation there or an understanding there, which is going to support you at that earlier age, which like you say, can then be supportive, I think more sort of 360 in that sense, because I mean, certainly from, you know, across the pond, as it were, that sort of seems to be that idea, you know, if I'm successful in basketball or I'm going to go to the NBA, NBA, or if I'm going to be in the NFL, then my life is suddenly going to be very different. Which is fine if that's where you end up. But it's like, say, it's all those other skills that you're going to learn across the board, which are going to give you more options as you go through, because you're not going to be playing basketball for your entire life or even football for your entire life. But what you are going to be doing is, like, say, learning those skills, understanding that actually life will develop and actually show you, if you allow it to, where you're going to be able to be of most service to other people. And I think if the sooner you sort of understand that, it will sort of develop in that way for you, and it will just take care of itself if you're aware that you can see the patterns, the skills, the people that you're going to come across. At that point, it all becomes very exciting rather than, like you say, I'm not going to ask a question. I'm going to sort of keep myself to myself because I'm not quite sure how the rest of the world is seeing me or those expectations of what I think they're telling me is going on. And then I just think that the whole sort of idea of well-being, mental health, understanding as a young person, you're still going to be a teenager, for example, and that's not an easy time, but it's going to be a different experience. And the more conversations you're having, and like I say, the more coaches you can affect who are going to have a different type of conversation, that's going to spread an awful lot of positivity through your immediate work, but also that ripple effect further afield.
Yeah, I hope so. I think there's, you mentioned the mental health issues. We're hearing that topic come up more and more here. I think the same is true in globally. So I assume you hear that discussion as well. So it's very important to think about how do we organize these opportunities for kids to be together in a sports space. One of the opportunities that you have is that sports provides a structure for kids to sort of practice a lot of things that they're going to be challenged with in the future. And so one example that I talk about a lot is just the idea of relationships. And so how do relationships develop? How do you manage relationships? And then how do you resolve conflicts? You know, so when you're in a relationship with someone, it is going to grow more and more complex over time as you get to know that person better. And conflict is a inherent part of any relationship if you get to know someone well enough. And sometimes we learn conflict avoidance strategies because that, you know, can keep the peace and avoid causing any trouble. But the ideas in restorative justice suggest that, you know, we actually should use conflict as an opportunity to face those challenges and strengthen relationships. And in sports, all of those things happen in sort of this contained team-based environment where you can address problems that might come up. And so you're on a team together. You imagine you're all friends, and eventually, let's say, you've got to decide who's going to get the starting position, you know. And so you've got best of friends practicing together. One of them has to get the starting position. And so that changes their relationship. And so there's an opportunity to not only, you know, make that decision about who gets the position to help the team succeed, but to focus on their relationship development to help them understand how that decision was being made, or even invite them into a conversation to help make that decision. And so those are all relational aspects that we can build into the things that are already happening in sports. And as you go on in life, these are just things that I don't think we get opportunities to practice. We don't get feedback on, you know, we don't get a chance to sort of fail at something and then get a chance to reflect on it, talk about it, and things like that. But sports has those opportunities, just as in a performance aspect. If you, you're missing your shots, you have an opportunity to then finish that game and get feedback. What was going wrong? Get some coaching. On the life skill side, there's opportunities for us to kind of build those things in, those social emotional learning skills, into the sport experience in a very positive way. And the final thing I'll say on that is it's not easy. I think it takes some study and reflection and professional development. But if we're intentional, and, you know, I think parents understand that this is something their kids can get and be beneficial, we can make a lot of positive strides.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm curious, in terms of the physicality, in terms of space and location as well. You sort of mentioned New Zealand. I know you sort of have this sort of expanding across America. Does it make a difference sort of where people are hearing this from? Or is there kind of like a universal language sort of within sport that kind of people sort of get drawn to?
Yeah, so I ended up it's different across contexts, I'll say, to your question. Sport has a very unique space in culture. American culture, and I imagine it's the same for whatever country you're in, sport has a unique place in culture. And so there's certain values that sports may uphold that could be incompatible otherwise incompatible with the culture, but because it's in a sport context, you can sort of get away with it. You know, think about a school sport activity, and you might see young people who are expressing their emotion in ways that would be absolutely unacceptable in a classroom. You know, so that's just an example of the culture, not to say that's right or wrong, but that the sport creates this context where things can happen that are not able to occur outside of that. So to the New Zealand point, I had had an opportunity to take students on a study abroad, and we were doing various activities to learn about the New Zealand culture. I'd always been interested in what I'm talking about here with sport and life skills. And when I got to New Zealand, I'd come to understand that restorative justice is a foundational part of their criminal justice system, particularly as it applies to youth. And even more so than their Ministry of Education has said, we want these values of restorative justice to inform our education system. And so schools have a program around, you know, they'll call it restorative practices, which is essentially around positive relationships, developing life skills and things like that. And so when I came across that, I'm like, well, what is this restorative justice thing all about? And as I talked to people in schools and communities there, I thought, well, this is just the same thing that I've always been thinking about and doing in the U.S. I mean, it's just a different name. Of course, as I've studied it, I learned that it is its own unique thing, and there's elements to it that I did not fully understand. But that's what got me on to that, was that the New Zealand culture had embraced it much more so than I could have understood here in the United States. And the essence of restorative justice is a focus on relationships, but really recognizing that conflict is inherent to relationships, and we need to be intentional about restoring any particular harm that is a result of that. And so that's been sort of a gift to me in my thinking. The final point to your question about the kind of the sport and culture that comes to mind is I was speaking with a school principal in New Zealand, and the reason I was meeting with him is that he was nationally recognized for his use of restorative practices in schools. And when I was talking to him, I kind of said, well, can you help me understand this idea of restorative practice as it relates to sports? And what he said, you know, sports is such an interesting thing. He said, because in school, I'm a restorative practitioner, so I'm focusing on relationships and life skills all the time. And he said, but I go and I volunteer for the soccer club, I referee. And he said, as soon as I'm refereeing, the kids talk to me. They, you know, they yell and they talk to me in ways that I would never accept in the school or even at home and things like that. And even for him, that was a moment of self-reflection where he thought, you know, why is that, that I wouldn't uphold these values in the sport context? And so it's a unique space, and that creates some challenges for doing this type of work.
Yeah, I love that. And the fact that it kind of changes, because like you say, if he did decide that he wasn't going to accept that behavior in like say during a game or in that kind of thing, then the whole structure of that might be that the game stops, or we're going to change the way we're going to do it, or the rules don't quite fit in with what I'd like that outcome to be. And that kind of big sort of titanic kind of change takes some time. And I think what you put together there, which I really liked, is the sense of how these things can change in different elements. So, like I say, it might be one conversation that you're able to have with somebody, whether it's a coach or even a younger person, which makes a difference to them in that particular moment. But then, like I say, if you suddenly have a country or, like you say, a Ministry of Education or a whole sort of large organization that can say, we're going to really go with this and jump on board and understand it and make it an integral part of what we're doing, then it suddenly has a massive effect. And so I think, you know, the work that you're doing, you know, you're doing it the same wherever you can do it, but how it then gets taken on and the impact it can have has these sort of really small details, but also can affect in large ways as well. And that's the sort of thing that comes up so much, is the fact that we can only do what we can do now, and hopefully it sort of has that wider impact if the right people are listening and enough people sort of understand how that can develop and affect people in a positive way.
Yeah, I think... you know, I think there's immense potential for coaches to take on this kind of work. If they can recognize it, it'll impact people in a positive way, as you said. One thing I've noticed in doing this work is coaches and teachers who coach youth, so say kids younger than, you know, 18 years old, are quite skillful in what they do. So sometimes those skills are really being directed at a specific objectives that doesn't include the things I'm talking about, teaching social and emotional skills. It's just not a part of their main focus. And so they might rely on this idea that, hey, kids are getting these good experiences. They're benefiting from it. So I don't need to be so focused on those elements. I actually would like to see those coaches who are clearly demonstrating the ability to to work with young kids in ways that many people aren't capable of, willing to take on this type of portfolio as well, to say that, you know, I'm going to be responsible for developing the social and emotional capacity of young people, and I'm going to do some things in my program to see to it that that happens and challenge myself to grow in that area. I don't think we're quite there yet. If we ever get there, I think you'll see sports as a transformative tool. So I hope in my lifetime I can kind of see that happen, you know, because I feel like I'm connected to the conversation. And I do think there's a lot to be optimistic about, but we're just not quite there yet.
Yeah, and it's a great opportunity, isn't there? Because the relationship in that particular environment is unlike almost anything else. Like you say, the conversations you can have, the experiences the young people are having, the relationships between the coaches and the different age groups, which isn't apparent. Like you say, it's not within a classroom. There is a unique moment and opportunity there. And I think you're right. I think if more people can use the skills that they already have and the opportunity to have conversations in a different way, that'd be absolutely amazing. And can you share something which was valuable about your school experience, or even a teacher that you had that sort of had a bit of an impact? And I'm always curious to see how that maybe has sort of wound its way into the sort of work that you're doing now and your experiences now.
So I think I thought about this question, and in my academic career, you know, you get into reading some of the literature, and so I've read about like what good teachers are, and there's this reading I was doing around culturally relevant pedagogy and how do you empower everyone to succeed from a variety of different backgrounds and make them feel recognized. And then I asked myself, when I was reading through here, these components of a cultural relevance, I'm like, well, who was that teacher for me? Was there one? And there was one that really stood out, and her name was Miss Ellenberger, high school teacher. Had a couple times she taught kind of marketing classes and things like that for students, and I think there was just an ability that stands out to set high expectations for all students, but to really help bring them along and experience a type of success that they didn't feel they were capable of. And as I look back on it, I can kind of see that happening to myself, but I can see it happening like all over the classroom. Like, it wasn't just that I experienced that. It was a pedagogy that really embraced the diversity of the classroom, but absolutely would not settle for mediocre work, and then brought you to success and then celebrated your success. And so those are transformational figures. I looked back at the website recent because I wondered, and she's in looks like she's in school administration now, working around curriculum, so I'm sure she's serving the district well in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely love that. And I find that kind of the expectation and sort of holding people to account, but also having that human nature to be able to understand, like say, the personal, the sorts of things we're talking about that are affecting people, and how that kind of goes hand in hand. It's a fascinating point, and certainly one that I come across a lot as a music teacher, where lots of students, you know, you want them to do well, you want them to be able to kind of thrive, but at the same time, you know, the amount of time they've got to practice compared to their academic, and like you're saying, sport and all the other things they're doing as well, and that kind of sweet spot, as it were, to support them to be who they are, but while understanding how everything fits around their life, is a difficult one, but I think a really fascinating and an important one to hold, as you said. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given? And indeed, maybe is there a piece of advice you'd give your younger self now, kind of looking back as a more experienced Michael, shall we say?
You know, best piece of advice, that's a really good question. So if I had to look back at myself, I'll start there. If I had to look back at my younger self, I think what I would do, I would just encourage myself to engage in all the activities that might not seem interesting at the time. Because for a good part of my kind of education journey, I didn't want anything to do with the material unless it was very specific to my interests, and it just fit. It was my prerogative. And when I learned how to kind of open yourself up to new ideas and try things that are a little bit uncomfortable, it just enriched my experiences. It reshaped the way I approach things. And I have often regretted not doing that. You know, for example, didn't like math, and so just didn't do it, you know, wouldn't turn in the homework, wouldn't engage, wouldn't. And so I find myself in this place where I'm not very good at it as a professional, but I think that closed off pathways of thinking for me, that I might be more creative or see things differently had I really taken advantage of those. So I always try to encourage young people to engage in things that might not seem relevant and think about how maybe they are relevant if you look at it a little bit different. So that's a piece of advice. And I'll tell you the other, this is a bit silly, but the best piece of advice that I had as a teenager was don't touch cigarettes, because I remember I was with a group of friends and it was the cool thing to do, and I was about to do it, and my brother foreclosed that opportunity. And it, you know, that kind of advice, which says something about decision making, and you know, sometimes you internalize that and apply it to a lot of different things, and that advice has always stuck with me about making the right choices.
Yeah, I really like that. I'd like to say they're very different, but still had a massive impact on you in different ways. And I think the other thing that just struck me is something I remember from a while ago chatting to somebody, is how the subject matter wasn't something they were interested in, but there was something about the teacher that they got something from, even though it wasn't a subject they went on to study per se, but there was something about the relationship. And like you say, if you don't open yourself up to learning wherever you are, in whichever situation you find yourself at, in, it might not be the subject where you find something amazing that happens, but it might be, like say, a conversation with that teacher, or allowing them to help you to kind of get involved in it, which is doing, you just don't know where that's going to come from. So I think that's fantastic advice, that just opening yourself up to whatever you can in whatever situation.
Yeah.
And is there a resource you'd like to share? And this can be anything professional or personal, but a video, song, film, book, podcast, but something that you'd like to share with us all.
What I'll say, I'll share one and then I'll generalize it out because it can lead to others. There's a book called The Little Book of Restorative Justice by Howard Zaire, and he's sort of considered the father of the restorative justice movement. It's about 105 pages, very easy, accessible read, very easy. And if you're interested in restorative justice and how it can apply to almost anything, it's a really good introductory piece. So it's called The Little Book of Restorative Justice. And then from that, there's, I think, 22 additional little books. And so if you're really interested in this or how different techniques can apply, there's little books on a variety of topics. And so there's one quick example called The Little Book of Circle Processes, and circles is a key practice, pedagogical practice of restorative justice. And so again, 100 pages, really easy read. And finally, they all run about $7 or $8 online, so they're quite accessible tools. I actually buy a few extra every year so that I can give them to teachers or coaches who I run into who might benefit from it.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that sharing, that like you say, the actual content itself. You sort of often hear people say, yeah, this person gave me this, or that this person showed me this was somewhere to sort of start with. And it just opens up a world. And it's nothing to you almost, but to them, it suddenly changes their direction in so many ways. Yep. Absolutely amazing. And just finally, obviously, the acronym FIRE is really important to us here at Education on Fire. And by that, we mean feedback, inspiration, resilience, and empowerment. What is it that strikes you when you hear that?
I like the acronym. And when you say FIRE, you know, you think about kind of urgency, you know, passion comes to mind. Like if a fire is burning, it needs to be dealt with. And I guess this work that I'm pursuing around restorative justice in sports and expanding opportunities and creating life skills, opportunities, learning opportunities for young people. I think it is urgent. I think we do need to think about how can we reframe and reshape the whole apparatus of youth sports and youth engagement activities that might invite more participation, more interest from young people, and provide a broader conceptualization of success. So I'm passionate about that. I'm fired up about that. And I think your acronym really relates to the way I hope to carry out my career for the next couple of decades, hopefully.
Fantastic. Well, Michael, thank you so much for sharing all of those insights. I love the fact that, you know, I'm talking to someone from a different continent, and yet there's so much which is relatable because it's human and it's personal. And I think we can all understand where that fits within our lives. And even, like say, culturally, sometimes it might make a difference, but we can pick and choose those bits that are going to make a difference. So please share with people where they can find out more about you, more about your work, the sorts of things that you're doing.
Yes. So, on the best place to find me is at, you know, my University of North Carolina at Greensboro. So that's UNCG, uncg.edu. And so I can be found on the website at our kinesiology department. There's contact information, links to relevant works and that sort of thing. And I'm always happy to engage with people, especially around the topics that we talked about today.
Fantastic. Well, keep up the great work. I'm always delighted to be able to share these things with people. That's why I'm here, because it's a whole world that I don't deal in day to day, or actually probably do in lots of ways, but not in the way that you've sort of explained it, which I think is fascinating and certainly a lot for me to think about in terms of how I take that into the musical context as well as sort of, like say, to directly how it works in sports. Yeah, thank you so much and keep up the great work.
Thank you much. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening and being part of this wonderful community. With over 300 episodes, I've collated 20 resources from guests that have been on the show to help you in your educational journey and those of you involved with young people. Just go to educationonfire.com and you can sign up on the homepage. Thanks for listening to the Education on Fire podcast. For more information of each episode and to get in touch, go to educationonfire.com. Education is not the filling of a pail, but the lighting of a fire.